like hopefully if this like goes well, like we'll do this more and stuff. Yeah. It's very, I want to leave a little room because it's very possible we mutually go like, well, that was, I don't think we should do that again. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that was the worst experience. I feel like it won't be.
Remember that record that you bought me like 2 years ago? Well, I just remember that it's sitting in the closet. So I called you up just to tell you I've been meaning to listen to that. I've been meaning to listen to that. Why don't you come over and talk about it? Ooh, ooh, ooh. Why don't you come over and talk about it?
Hey everybody, welcome to the show. Welcome to I've Been Meaning to Listen to That, the podcast where we go through albums we've been meaning to listen to and use it as a conduit to learn about each other and our guests. I'm Andrew M. Ghost Scream.
Oh, I'm Harper Thompson.
It's Sharper Thompson, as in a knife. Whoa.
Spooky.
That's pretty scary. Harper did like a scary finger motion. I was like really, really committed to that. This is our very spooky Halloween episode. Me and Harper, our first episode together was actually a Halloween episode.
Yes.
So it was like the Little Shop of Horrors, which this has a lot of parallels to, by the way, which is a lot of fun. So this is cool. This is awesome. We got this amazing guest. She's a comedian and has played the Edinburgh Fringe Festival with her show Plots. It's Leslie Ewing Burgess, everybody.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
Nice. Thank you for having me. It's really nice to be here.
I promised you last year I would have you on, and that like because I it just like kept like slipping my mind. I was like, I gotta be a person of my word and stuff like that. So
yeah, well, I'm very much undiagnosed ADHD, so I get it.
Yeah. Same bestie. Yeah.
I mean, who can be bothered to commit to getting diagnosed when we don't have brain spans? You know,
I took a BuzzFeed quiz. I think I got the gist of it.
I've seen so many infographics and gone, that sounds like me, and that's enough.
Don't need to go to a doctor. Leslie, thank you so much for appearing on the show. This has been a long time coming. This is really exciting. We're here to talk about the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Let's just get straight into it. To the both of you, what is your history with the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Well, okay, for me, I am 37 years old. I just turned 37. It was just, I think it was around my 18th birthday that I got into Rocky Horror. And I am quite an obsessive person, so I get very focused on things. And that was what happened with Rocky Horror. I feel like everything made more sense to me. You know, it was this movie I was aware of it, the sort of images associated with it I knew of, but it's not something I think I would have ever really chosen to watch. And then I just happened to see it and I went, this is everything to me. Oh, God, it's been 19 years since then. And I still love it very, very, very much. And I think because I was obsessed with it at such a sort of formative age as well, the amount of like specificity I have with every single lyric, with every single thing of it is, I don't think I could commit to any obsession now the way that I committed to that obsession, because I have other things to do. Also, I was in college for theater at the time that it came out, it came out in 1975. I was minus 11 years old. At the time I got obsessed with it, I was in college for theater. And so I had people around me who understood, but not to the extent that I wanted to talk about it. Like, I think it was quite alienating. We'd have these song circles. We'd get to, at the beginning of like this, our performance class, everyone would go around and sing a song. And every single day I was like, I'm going to sing something Rocky Horror. And I think it was tiring.
And it's like theater kids, they have like a high tolerance for tiring things. So it's like, you had to be really obsessive.
Well, I think I was the wrong sort of tiring for theater kids. Like, got you know, it, I was just, it. Yeah, yeah. I never quite fit into that, but I was like, we have this thing in common, and they're like, not as much as you think. And I was like,
that's amazing. That's like very endearing. That's like, I was like razzing you a little bit. That's very endearing. That's like really sweet. What about you, Harper? What is your you hinted at like a history with it. I have a vague idea of it, but like, what is your history?
My slicks and fishnets shirt. So it's kind of similar. I had like an early teenage, you know, entry into Rocky Horror. For my 16th birthday, actually, we went to the one here in LA. I went with some of my friends, and so my mom actually worked in an office building with this very nice woman named Abby, who was on security in the Rocky cast at the LA in the LA cast. And so that's the only reason why she was like, oh yeah, you can go do this thing at midnight, in LA. So I was very lucky that I knew someone there a little bit. And so then I did that and I got really into it, of course. And so my friends and I went pretty regularly throughout the like last half of high school. And then when I got to college, I auditioned for the cast in Santa Cruz. So and we were called Slugs and Fishnets. Yeah, because we're the banana slugs at UC Santa Cruz. And so, yeah, so I was not like a main
character. I thought
character.
That was a lyric. like, I don't remember that. Like, okay.
Yeah, it could be. It feels, you know, feels like it could be. But yeah, so I mean, I didn't, you know, I'm always like, I've always been that kind of person who's like, I would describe myself as theater adjacent. Like I never did any theater in high school, but I always hung out with theater kids. And so I was like, for me, even trying out for Rocky was like wild. And I was like, oh, but I don't want to be a character. I just want to be like a supporting cast, you know? So I was a Transylvanian. And that was fun though. It was nice to be part of the team, you know? We did like an opening dance routine to Spice Up Your Life by the Spice Girls, which was really fun. And so I did that for like a year in college. And then, you know, I had to focus on school, so I stopped doing it. And also it's kind of a big commitment. It is a big time commitment. Even if you're just supporting cast.
Even if there's a time warp element of the show, you know, that like, you know.
Yeah, so I could have jumped to the left straight back in time. But so it was a good time of my life. But then I was really ready to take a break from Rocky, I think, after like, you know, having to watch it like three times a week for like a whole year. Then because you know, you have to rehearse and stuff. So I was really consuming it a lot. I have all of the callbacks like live in my brain. So all the things you shout at the screen, you know, just like anytime I hear any of the songs or I'm watching the movie, like I can't help myself. They just come out of me. I'm sure it's like the same for you. So
yeah, I had that as I was getting ready for this episode, as I was listening to the soundtrack, I could just hear all the callback bits in my brain. Like even in I Can Make You Man, like, yeah, so in just 7 days, there was the one that's like, and six seven long nights. So
yeah.
Oh, yeah,
ours was six long nights, but yeah.
That's better. Makes more sense, but it's not the one that I heard.
Hey, Harper, like, can I talk to you? Sorry, I don't think Leslie's a real fan. I don't think.
I have the disadvantage of coming from quite a small city, and so there was not a cast when I went to see it. And so I feel like people did the best that they could with what they had, but I mean, someone could have started one. I mean, I could have started one, but I was too busy being awkward, not having friends who liked it enough.
Yeah, I do feel like I was very spoiled, like growing up in LA and being able to see, like, I think one of the best Rocky casts in the world very regularly. And then also, you know, in Santa Cruz, it was like a very committed group as well. And it was kind of nice because, like, you know, Santa Cruz is a kind of kooky place. So there were a lot of people that always wanted to come out. And we got to do it actually at the Del Mar Theater, which is like a historic theater in Santa Cruz. We did it, I think, like 3 or 4 times there. And it was like, it was a really cool thing to be a part of, for sure.
Wait, nice. So it was like they would screen the movie and then people would be in like a cast, quote unquote, and like do the callbacks and stuff. Oh, that's quite fun. I thought you were actually in a production of it. That's interesting.
So you're basically like miming, you're like performing and you're not saying, you know, you're not mic'd up or anything, but you're performing in front of the screen doing the same thing as the actors on the screen.
I did that for like Midsommar and like people in the audience didn't know that very much. I was like miming all the like, I was doing the dance around the pole, like that was in the middle of the screening.
I feel like it would work for any piece of media, to be honest.
I think so too. I think we should do more shadow casts for things for sure.
The shadow cast for like 7 pounds, the Will Smith movie. Just I don't know.
Oh no.
Is that better or worse than the fact that I wanted to say Schindler's List?
I'll say worse. I'll be generous.
Andrew, this was your first time watching it, right?
Yeah, yes. First of all, to the both of your points, I feel like this is a movie that, to be obsessive, you have to get into it super young, when your brain isn't fully, like, before the age of 26, where your brain isn't fully formed yet, and it forms new creases and wrinkles and stuff. Because, I remember shows from my youth, Bear in the Blue House, or, Blue's Clues or something like that, where I remember images very vividly. I remember the mail time song. I remember, but I can't remember for the life of me a single episode all the way through of what happens in Blue's Clues or whatever. Where I feel like this is the perfect movie for that, where it's like the imagery is so iconic. Tim Curry is it's one of those performances that people cite as that made me realize I was bisexual, blah, blah, blah. That made me feel close to a bunch of weirdos and stuff. It feels like that. It feels like such a formative text in so many ways that coming in at 28 years old, I'm like, okay, cool. This is So my preconceived notion was, I remember seeing, the first time I've ever seen anything related to it at all was the Glee episode of Rocky Horror Picture Show, where Emily St. James, prior guest of the show from the AV Club, gave it an F. It was a screenshot of Matthew Morrison shirtless with his tie. He was ew, playing Rocky. And he was making a no face, and then next to it, F. So I remember that. I didn't think it was that bad, honestly. But I was a young person. I didn't really understand. And I watched all of that show, the first two seasons, for some reason. This was the time of my life where I was obsessive about television. I was just literally watching everything that was on TV, because I was such a big AV Club fan when that website was good. Where I would watch Whitney. I would watch every episode of Whitney for some reason. Don't talk to me about morning sex when you haven't had morning breath or whatever they say on that show. I remember that show. It was very similar, where I remember the imagery of Kurt was in the riffraff costume, and Amber Riley was Frankenfurter. I don't know if that was a good guy.
Yeah,
that was odd casting, but it works, I guess.
I do like the fact, because it is so much of a thing of fucking with gender, I like to further fuck gender with that. And so in the same way that when there is a shadow cast, I do quite like when there is someone who is female or femme playing Frank, because, it's such a normal thing too for sort of cis men to just kind of go, I'm going to dress as Frankenfurter because it's going to be funny. Mm-hmm. So I like when people kind of do it. That is the thing, is in my sort of desire to be in shadow cast and stuff, that was always the character I most was like, I love Frankenfurter more than anyone. And that's he's an anti-hero, isn't he? He's
like Joker for gay people. Kind of.
That's exactly who he is. I love him so much, but I'm just but also no one can do that as well as Tim Curry, because obviously Tim Curry made that role. Tim Curry played Frankfurter on stage before the movie was made. That role is Tim Curry. And so anyone else trying, I can't imagine how they would even start to touch on that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. It's just it's different from, there's a lot of musicals that aren't so defined by the original cast.
Yeah.
But just lyrically and stuff, just the way that Tim Curry does everything, I'm like, it would be really weird to see someone work from the text without any context or without any sort of awareness of the way Tim Curry plays that character, to see how it would come across, because yeah, he completely is that character.
Yeah, so I knew the Glee episode was in tribute to Rocky Horror. So I saw that episode without seeing the movie. So, and seeing that F score next to that episode, it made me presume that the movie was better. That the movie was more superior to the Glee episode, that which is a tribute. So I just went my whole life. I then went about my life. I went through the hero's journey of going to college and stuff, and learned a thing or two about life and such. And throughout, I never watched it up to this point. And I would always see a box set of it, at Target, and see that the 40-year anniversary, the anticipation edition. Yeah, I always see a steel box or a Blu-ray, and they would always release it. I would always see the people dress up as the characters, which I recognize from the Glee episode, but not the movie. It was just in the periphery of my understanding. So when I finally watched it, all the moments, all the iconic moments, the anticipation joke, the songs lived up to the expectation of, oh, wow, this is pretty fantastic. This is pretty undeniable. But also, the shoe leather that holds all this greatness together is so thin and so baffling to me. That, which is great, but also I there's a part of it, this, you just have to lean in and just shut up and enjoy the greatness. Stop thinking too hard about it. But at the same time, I'm such a literal minded person that a movie Spirited Away or a movie Nightmare Before Christmas, which is just more vibes and aesthetic and just the experience dragging you through more than this is the meaning of Rocky Horror, it's about this. it kind of baffled me at the same time. So that's my preconceived notion.
I get that. I think I said to you in a message when we were playing this episode, basically the two perspectives you can have is either if you look at the sort of Brad and Janet perspective of it, it's just just a weird fucking night. They just have a really weird night. Traumatic night in many ways, but also they will move on with their lives. They will do other things. It will become a weird memory. And then from the perspective of the Transylvanians, the people in the castle, it's just, uninvited house guests turn up and just sort of fuck things up a bit, they're not welcome. They're very welcoming to them. Like Frankenfurter is desperate to have them there. He wants them to stay for the night or maybe a bite. They're there and he's okay, whatever reason you're here, stay here. And he is in his own way, very welcoming to them. He has issues. Other things happen, but it's just
the issue of murderer.
and cannibal.
But
that's some stuff. That's all fine. He's just vibing. He's just doing his thing, and they turn up and they're judgmental of it. No one else. Riff Raff hates him, but other than that, that's already been going on. No one who's normally in that house really thinks anything of it because it's just the way he is. And Brad and Janet are like, oh, what? Oh, he's so sexy. Oh, no, we're eating Eddie. Oh, So, it's just a real study on perspective, isn't it?
And that's what this is all about. This is what this episode and that show is about. Before we get into themes, because that transitions into themes, but before we get to themes, and Leslie, as a self-proclaimed obsessive, the build-up to this point, what led to Rocky Horror, and then also what makes it so great to you?
Oh, God. That's a very intellectual question. I don't know if I was prepared for it. I suppose it is just that thing for, I guess, going for the sort of your second part of your question first. I suppose what sort of the thing that really has resonated with me and sort of did, especially when I was the age I was when I first saw it, is I suppose just it is that sort of appeal to outsider sort of people. It is that sort of thing of just, and also I've always liked spooky things quite a lot. And I sort of have realized with time, my birthday's October 13th, which is the spookiest day. And so I think that this was my destiny, I think that who I am has been formed by that. This is the same thing I do in therapy where I'm I don't know how to answer your question, but here are some sort of adjacent thoughts. I believe this is sort of a vague memory, but there is a version of the poster that says a different set of Jaws, I believe. And because I think it was released at the same time as Jaws. Or very close to it. I believe so. I should have fact checked this beforehand, but it only just occurred to me now. But yeah, so I suppose that it's one of those things where you're like, how in 1975 was this something that they tried to release mainstream, where even had it been released now in 2023 for the first time, had it never existed till this point, it's the sort of thing that would, if it was became successful now out of nowhere, it would be quite shocking as well.
I feel like it would be like a weird A24 movie that has like some diehard fans and then it gets like a, you know, 3.3 on Letterboxd or something, you know.
Yeah.
What I mean?
Yeah, it's like, it's sort of, I suppose there's an interesting thing too that I've sort of noticed in terms of like, I suppose because there's so much sort of debate about like, you know, sort of trans issues and stuff these days, which is shocking because, you know, just fucking let people be who they are. But, you know, there was a sort of point in the 60s and the 70s where, like, you know, the song Lola by the Kinks came out, and that is about a trans person, you know? But the song Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed came out, and that's about a trans person. So it's interesting to kind of realize all this time later that people are still sort of having such issues with these concepts that have been sort of in sort of the mainstream for such a long time. Yeah. I was about to say, yeah. does that answer your question? Yeah, so. But it does not like, in any way, shape, or form.
So I guess let's get into themes and what this is about, this musical is about then. Harper, what do you feel like this Rocky Horror Picture Show is about?
That's a great question. I don't know that it's really about too much of anything, to be honest. I think it's like a kooky time with a bunch of people in a castle doing some weird shit, you know? I think that's kind of the main thing that's going on here. I mean, there is...
Richard O'Brien's pitch, like, all right.
All right. We're in the elevator. I'm telling you, there's a castle, there's some kooky people, there's some weird shit.
Sold!
No, but I mean, I do think, like, you know, it's like a good time. I do think the songs are not bad. You know, I will say, like, I think that this is not, you know, despite the fact that I've seen it hundreds of times, I do not think this is a great movie, but I don't think it's also, I also don't think it's a bad movie. I think it kind of gets a rap for being a junky movie that you can, like, you know, people are yelling at the screen. And it's like, you know, more of a cultural experience than it is a movie. But I don't think it's a bad movie. I think the songs are good. And I think it has some interesting stuff going on about, yeah, like kind of like sexual liberation. It's the 70s, you know? But yeah, it's just kind of a goofy romp is what I would say.
I think it's interesting though, because sort of the idea of people kind of treating it like it is itself, just like, I guess, like it's a failure or anything they tried to do when it so obviously is trying to kind of pay tribute to very sort of cheesy sci-fi B movies. And I mean, that's, you know, the first song in the whole thing, Science Fiction Double Feature,
is about all those movies. Yeah,
and like, so, yeah. Yeah, and which I think as a song, like, stands up, like, just out of the context entirely. Like, there's very, Time Warp obviously stands up out of context, but everything else is very much tied into everything is going on there. But Science Fiction Double Feature is just a bop, you know? It's just a fucking great song. I had a whole thing where when I was 18 and initially obsessed with Rocky Horror, in my CD player alarm clock, I had the Rocky Horror soundtrack. And so every single morning when I woke up for college, I woke up to Science Fiction Double Feature. And so every time I hear it now, it still makes me go and sort of jolt. I did just, that was visual.
Yeah, that was
me jolting up. Like, it just instantly wakes me up. I'm like, yes, I'm ready.
How many times have you seen this? Like, can you even calculate that? Like,
I have no idea. I genuinely have no concept of how many times I would have watched it at the time, because I feel like it's just as often as I possibly could. I showed it to my mom, who had never seen it somehow. Because I know so many people who are like, yeah, my mom showed it to me when I was 8. And I'm like, my mom barely knew it existed. I showed it to her. And then I was crying at the end. and I mean, spoiler, I mean, if anyone's listening to this episode and has not seen Rocky Horror or cares about spoilers, this might not be the place for you. Frankenfurter, the anti-hero but the best character in anything ever, ends up getting killed, and so I'm crying at the end, and my mom's like, Leslie, he wasn't a nice person. I'm just like, but I love him. Yeah, just a real, real big moment of my mom probably wondering if I was okay, and I don't know if I was.
That's a social media clip. Yeah. Like, that's it.
But yeah, so no idea how many times I've seen it. It's one of the things, too, where it's one of my great joys in life to show it to people for the first time. And so I had, in the space of like 6 months, a couple of years ago, got to show it to two different friends for the first time for both of them. Oh, so exciting. And also my favorite thing to do, I have a smart light bulb in my apartment, and it's great. I love it. And I have it on my Google Home thing, so I can control it with my voice. It's pretty cool. That's not what this episode's about. Because I show this to people within my own sort of space. There's in the scenes where Frank and Furter goes into Janet's room and then Brad's room. Janet's room is sort of lit very sort of pinky red. Brad's room is lit blue. And so I would just change the lighting to that. Full experience to watch it with me is what I'm saying.
That's amazing.
Just
that's
get
so
people.
Fun. You're creating your own little shadow cast.
Yeah, I know. It was probably alarming for them, considering those are the scenes in which Frank seduces both of them. But, you know.
First of all, like I think what makes this movie so wonderful is the fact that you can watch it over and over again. And like when it first, I watched a video essay about it, and when it came out, they didn't have like Lyric Genius or anything like that. So in order to like memorize the songs, they had to pay the theater to go and see it again and again. And like, there's like documentary footage of some guy going like, I saw this movie 40 times in theaters, blah, blah, blah. Like it was like really, really intense, like really, really. It must have been like a real lifeline for a lot of people, especially in that context at that time. So that's wonderful.
Oh, can I say something really quickly before we move on? I just remembered the first time I was really aware of Rocky actually was I love the movie Fame, the 1980 film about the performing arts high school in New York. And so there's a scene in that where they go to a midnight showing of Rocky Horror with a shadow cast and the characters like go on stage. And I remember seeing that, I think when I was like 10 or something, and being like, that's cool. I'm going to go do that one day. And I think that's when the seed was planted.
I love this. Like, I think what Leslie's talking about of you bringing your friends to watch the movie and experience it for the first time, where Leslie was talking about the blue and the pink light, you doing that for your friend, watching the movie. Like, I think this really does what movies are supposed to do, where it's a communal experience, like a euphoric communal experience, like shared with friends and like what they were able to create with all the inside jokes and like the shadow cast and all that makes it so. Like, I think we're experiencing that now with the Taylor Swift concert movie and also the Barbenheimer thing, where we're kind of getting back to, oh, yeah, like this is why movies were created. It's like I watched this at an outdoor theater where it was like but everyone was like wearing headphones. So everyone was like I was kind of expecting people to like run up on stage and like in drag or do something crazy. But like, I just like watched. So it was like, everyone was just like the cinema. Like everyone was just like, so it was a good opportunity to like see what it was. But then it was like, I wish I kind of could have experienced the actual, just going blind to like all the traditions, all that stuff.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, too. It's interesting that would be an outdoor theater, and then that would be the experience of it, because it feels like that is the peak place to do some of the things like chuck hot dogs and, you know, like throw toilet paper and stuff. Like, that feels like there's probably a lot of movie theaters that don't want people doing all that stuff inside, you know? There's, like, you know, like water pistols as well, and then newspapers when it's raining. Like, all this stuff seems to lend itself so well to an outdoor viewing. And so it's really strange that they decided to kind of go the silent disco route. Like, which actually, this is sort of, that could have also been different. So there's the sort of bane, you mentioned about how I do Edinburgh Fringe, and that is, you know, I've gone to Edinburgh Fringe for years, every single year. And there's the bane of everyone's existence during Edinburgh Fringe is there's a silent, there are a couple silent disco walking tours that they run.
Oh.
So there's a big group of people and they're just all walking around with their headphones on, but they are not silent because they just loudly sing along to certain bits of the songs, and they'll just, it's the worst. Like, they'll just stop outside of venues, and there's like, you know, in Edinburgh during the Fringe, like any place can be a venue, like any pub, any sort of, basically anywhere that has enough space for someone to do a show, someone is doing a show. And there's usually not very good, like, noise blockage in these sort of places because they're not built for that. And so the number of people's shows that get interrupted by people just singing, like, a part of a song outdoors, like, at full volume is crazy.
Very strange, yeah. The bane of my existence was when, like, undiagnosed ADHD, like, the bane of my existence was when Bane disassembled my plane midair. It was so annoying.
Excellent. Strong work.
Bane, another Rocky Horror-esque figure, by the way. Like, you know, the actual monster.
That's true. He'd fit right in.
I am Frankenfurter's reckoning. Just like, whatever. What are some other themes of this, like the actual content of this movie? Like, what do you think are some themes of it? Because I have a few theories, but like, what do you think?
Oh, God. Again, the intellectual questions. I'm just like, I have so much stuff that I could talk about, which I feel like it gets a deep dive. But then when it comes to the actual, like, things like themes, I'm like, I don't know. It's just vibing. We're just vibing and having a nice time, you know? I do always think of it like, as I say, it's just basically a weird night. And I do very much think, like, every once in a while you'll have, like, a night out and it kind of just goes so wrong. It goes so far from the way you expect it to be. And it seems to go on forever and ever. And then you're just, like, sitting in someone's kitchen and crying for some reason, but trying not to cry because you're happy to be there, but you can't stop because you've started. And just all that sort of thing. And, like, then the next day when you wake up, you're like, I think I had an all right time, but also it was really weird. And I feel like that's the Rocky Horror vibe, you know. Like, that's, yeah,
first of all, it's just like a smorgasbord of tones and genres. Like, it feels like playing with your action figures, like, but instead of like G.I. Joe playing with like My Little Pony, it's like coexisting in like a kid's imagination. It's like Broadway and horror comedy, screwball parody, like Airplane, drag show, cabaret show, 50s greaser rock, David Bowie leftovers. You know, it feels like just all this coexisting. Even the presentation of Frankenfurter is like, okay, so Frankenfurter is a vampire? No, okay, Frankenfurter is a mad scientist alien? You know, it's like, it really just throws a lot at you. And like, it's like, it feels like an improv scene of just like, you know, just like making stuff up as it goes along.
The timeline of it. Like, the timeline of it is something I'm absolutely fascinated by, if you don't mind me rambling about the timeline, because I have been thinking about it a lot.
Yeah.
Because just the series of events, the way they play out, so obviously Brad and Janet are at the wedding during the day. He proposes, they decide to go visit Dr. Scott. So I think by the time they get to the castle, it's not that late, it's just quite dark and stormy. So they're there, they meet everyone, Frankenfurter reveals Rocky, then kills Eddie. Then everyone goes to bed, just pretty immediately thereafter, don't they? So then obviously then Frank goes into Janet's and then Brad's room. Mm-hmm. Frank and Brad are interrupted because Rocky has escaped. So then Janet sees that Brad has got it on with Frank, and is upset in having just literally done the same thing moments before. Goes and finds Rocky. She gets on with Rocky. God. Then they're discovered by everyone. And then dinner is prepared.
Like, what's this? The doctor comes by.
Yeah, Dr. Scott, yeah.
Dr. Scott.
Yeah, because then...
Pull the tablecloth, reveal they killed Eddie. Yeah, Meatloaf.
Yeah, they're eating Eddie. Everyone's horrified, who finds out, apart from Rocky, who doesn't give a shit. Because, I mean,
they're having dinner at 4 a.m., presumably.
Well, this is the thing. But then also, as I say, I don't think Brad and Janet got there that late. Okay, so it could be, they might have had quite an early night. It's no way to tell. And I think that in that house, time warpy as it is, it's hard to tell what time it is at any point.
The pool.
Yeah. Well, so then Janet, grabs Rocky, because she's upset. And then that really pisses Frank off. And so then he starts to chase her and has, you better wise up, Janet Weiss, which is your apple pie don't taste too nice. Horrifying and amazing line. Yeah, so that all happens. Then Frank freezes everyone and then dresses them up to have the floor show in the swimming pool. And then does a beautiful song of his own, I'm Going Home. Everyone's very touched by it and also knows how to work spotlights. And then Riff Raff and Magenta in their super cool outfits appear. Riff Raff kills Frank and Rocky, and then the house takes off, and Brad and Janet and Dr. Scott are just lying in the rubble, Yassify, just going
in their Yassified state. You know? Yeah,
yeah.
Now reading that in like a Wikipedia page is like what? Like to get clarity, like the events of this. Like, all those events in sequence next to each other is like very baffling. It's like a very endearing, but very baffling at the same time.
Also trying to get a grip on the backstory of the characters, like in Time Warp, when Columbia is doing her little solo, she talks about how she met, like, it has to be, it is Frank she's talking about, but her description of him doesn't sound like it would be. Because a snake of a guy gave her an evil wink. He shook her up. He took her by surprise. He had a pickup truck and the devil's eyes. Like, it's a very... So Frank found Columbia, and then he found Eddie. Because first he spurned Columbia for Eddie. And then she says he cast Eddie off like an old overcoat for Rocky. So it's just this... Anyway, it's just, and also, sorry, I have lots of thoughts, but no way to organize them because of my bad brain.
Well, like, to your point, like, it feels like there's like a, and I presented this tape to you a little bit ago, but like, it's very David Bowie of like the, I actually think these songs stand as songs if you just like put it together and went like, hey, David Bowie never released this is a never before listened to David Bowie album. I think people would accept it. I think people would go, because he likes to do those non sequitur kind of like storytelling things. And like,
yeah, Diamond Dogs was largely meant to be like a musical about, like, based on 1984 by George Orwell. And then that didn't happen. And so there are a couple songs. There's the song on that album, 1984, and the song Big Brother, which are definitely from it. But that whole album feels very dystopian, and it feels like you could form it into a musical. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that does sort of tie into your point that, you know, Rocky Horror could just as easily be that. Apart from, there are a couple of weird stylistic changes throughout. Like, I do like that the characters all have very unique voices in you know, their song styles. Like, obviously, Hot Patootie, Bless My Soul, Eddie's song, is unlike anything else on that soundtrack. I hated it when I was a teenager.
Wow.
I was so team Frank. I know, it's insane. I'm very loyal, but like not in an intelligent way. Like, I was like, no, I love Frankenfurt. I'm like, no, but also he was horrible to Eddie. Like, I'm okay. It's okay to sympathize with Eddie, but I'm just like, fuck you, Meatloaf. Like, you know.
But that ties into my other theme. One theme of like the 50s. Like clashing with the 70s, and like this is like kind of the death of the 50s and like the birth of the 70s, like the death and absorption of 50s rock into queer 70s glam rock, where Dan and Brad are these 50s picket fence ideals, and like Eddie kind of represents the counterculture, like the of the 50s, and then Frankenfurter rose tints Janet and Brad through like the liberating tool of pleasure, and then kills Eddie and absorbs his musicality, like absorbs and like puts his brain into Rocky. Also, like, we're at the end of like the Rose Tint My World song, you kind of hear the rockabilly, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, like, yeah, like at the end of that song. And
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's one theme. And then the other theme is just like Frankenfurter as this extremely problematic Christ figure slash leader of a movement. Like this idea of he presents and expands our minds through the sheer act of his rebellious existence, through the philosophy of don't dream it, be it. But then there, like your mother said, he's not a very nice man. Like, there's a...
No, but I love him.
Yeah, we know, Leslie.
I literally just found out last night that a person that I'm dating one time dressed up as Frankenfurter, and I was like, oh my God.
Hey, there you go. But like, yeah, there's like this, like, there's like some borderline dodginess of just like, the creation of like a Frankenstein monster that's your sex doll and stuff like that. That's a little like, yeah. There's, and then he murders people. He treats Riffraff, Columbia, Rocky very poorly. So he isn't really like,
yeah.
I when I watched this for the first time, I thought it would be like, oh man, this guy's a horny freak, but you know, he's not so bad. He's like, he created this community and stuff like that.
No, he's worse than anything.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. So like, it's just like, so it ends with like Riffraff Judasing like Frankenfurter, and then like it's just like it's kind of like to make things go forward and stuff. So
there's also these interesting moments of vulnerability with these characters, like Frank's. I think Frank's biggest moment of vulnerability, apart from like his pure undiluted excitement about Rocky when he first reveals him and everything, and during I Can Make You a Man and the reprise. Apart from that, that's quite vulnerable and quite sweet. But then in the floor show, which I think in one of the best lyrics in the entire thing is whatever happened to Faye Ray, that delicate satin draped frame as it clung to her thigh, how I started to cry because I wanted to be dressed just the same. And it's just like you get this interesting insight, because even within the context of this alien species, he is still a transvestite. He's still, it's not like, oh, everyone there is like this. He's still kind of an outsider, and obviously he's made it work for him for a long time. But yeah, so there's that. And then with Riff Raff, and I do think about this too much, thank you for asking, with Riff Raff, his sort of big moment of vulnerability is when Magenta, with her constantly changing accent, which I'm obsessed with, when she goes, you killed them, but I thought you liked them. And Riff Raff goes, he didn't like me. He never liked me. And it's just this really strange, like, again, you get this weird sort of moment where you just get like, it shows so much more to this character than we ever are going to get revealed to us, because it's the end of the movie.
Yeah. And like the what's her name? Like the person played by Little Nell, like that character, Columbia, right? Yeah. Like the fact that she was in love with Eddie, like this character we see for one sec, like one song, and then.
But then she also is clearly, she clearly has a little bit of a like fling with Magenta, because the two of them, when they're being voyeuristic, which Magenta does say in Time Warp that she likes being voyeuristic, so it does track. All the characters are very well thought through. I feel like you could justify anything if you had 19 years to do so. But yeah, so
that's hilarious. That's so funny.
there's a whole canon to it. Just in that scene, the two of them are in Columbia's Eddie themed bedroom, but as they're kind of mocking Janet and Rocky during Touch a Touch a Touch Me, the two of them are just genuinely like just all over each other. And I'm like, oh, well, this is a thing as well, because it is very much a pleasure castle. So I suppose, yeah.
Any other themes, any other things like kind of thematically, like macro sense?
I feel like maybe like traditional, like playing with traditional gender roles. Because like, exactly. Brad and Janet are coming from like a wedding at the very beginning, and then they're getting engaged kind of because it feels like what they're supposed to do at this point in their lives. And then they go to, you know, this place where, like, you know, this castle where gender is kind of not exactly, you know, playing out the way that we've seen it play out already with Brad and Janet. But then also, like, you see at the end of I'll Make You a Man reprise, they play the wedding song again, the, you know, that instrumental do, 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 do. And then, you know, Frank jumps into Rocky's arms, you know, like they're like it's their wedding night. So I feel like there's definitely some awareness of that.
Yeah, like Brad and Janet feel like characters that will never experience, like if they never went to the castle, they would never experience ecstasy, but they would never experience depression either. You know, like they're kind of like...
Well, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Just very much on a level all the time. Also, just both just massive virgins, but it did not take much for them to change their minds on that. Like, it's...
Yeah. Like, and just like, I think that what's beautiful about this is like kind of like how quickly they like realize they like all this stuff. They kind of like they were resistant at first, but then like just with a little like encouragement, they're like, yeah, all these boxes we put ourselves in are kind of like preventing us from being like, euphoric and happy and stuff, you know?
Yeah. But then Brad's sort of toxic masculinity kind of wins out over everything because, like, you know, even though he's just had a lovely old time with Frank, he never seems to have like any sort of desire to go back to there or any sort of second thoughts about it. He's just like, no, man, you know, like it's just, he's just a bit of a toxic guy, Brad.
Let's go take a quick break. Click. So let's get straight into it. And we're back here to talk about Rocky Horror Picture Show highlight songs. I think we could talk about like highlight songs, but also just like highlight moments, highlight aspects, jokes, whatever. Leslie, what's a highlight? Let's just like go one at a time. Like, what's a highlight song for you?
I weirdly have a thing where I feel like every time someone else makes reference to Rocky Horror, the first song that I want to reference in response is Eddie. You know, what a guy, makes you cry, and I did. Like, I just, it's just always the first place my brain goes, and I don't know why, because it's not one of the songs that I would describe as one of my favorites, but I think it's just quite a fun song, you know?
It's like all the songs have this structure that's like so phenomenal. Like they're so structurally sound.
I feel like I get the sort of same kind of songwriting, like the same sort of euphoria kind of noticing how good the songwriting is that I do about Flight of the Conchords, who I think by far are the best. I'm as a comedian, like, you know, I sort of think about comedy stuff a lot, and I'm not a musical comedian, but I have to watch a lot of musical comedy as by default of watching a lot of comedy, and no one is as good as Flight of the Conchords. And every time I listen to them, I'm just like, How did you make that all fit together so perfectly? And I feel a lot that way about Rocky Horror. And particularly interestingly with Damn It, Janet, like, it's obviously such a silly, cheesy song, but it is so perfect. Like, everything about it is like, it's exactly the right levels of everything. It's the right levels of silly. It's like the rhymes are impeccable. Nothing feels forced at all. Like, there's here's the ring to prove that I'm no joker, and there's three ways that love can go, and that's good, bad, or mediocre. And that's just, like, it's so good.
Gary Bostwick, his voice is so, like, really good. Like, it's fantastic. Yeah. Phenomenal, yeah. To speak to Eddie, where even if it was sung by, like, a guy in a German accent, like, songwriting still kind of, like, because that didn't gravitate, like when I watched it for the first time, I kind of zoned out during that scene because it's like, oh, it's not as exciting as Time Warp, it's not as exciting as like whatever. But then when you listen to it, you see the song structure there, and even when "und I did," like, that's so fun and interesting. Exactly. Yeah,
it's so good. I really do like pretty much every song. I really enjoy "Over at the Frankenstein Place," and I really enjoy that. Yeah, it's so good. And I love the fact that it looks like the castle is singing. You know, that's just, I think I take a lot of joy in. It's just, you know, it's just every time, I think I annoyingly over-explain the movie every time I do show it to someone, because every time that comes on, I'm like, the castle's singing. And I do believe that that is the case, because they're getting the response "Over at the Frankenstein Place" to their song, but they wouldn't know it's called that. Oh, just and another moment of riffraff vulnerability with his little solo at the window during the exactly. it's just these little interesting things where I'm like, can I just have like an individual movie about like, oh God, it's like, did you ever watch Lost?
Watch Lost.
I know, I was going to say, you were saying earlier about your TV obsessive phase.
I only watched Lost. That was a little before my time.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking. Because you said you're how old are you now?
28, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like 9 years older than you, so I just am like, was the right age. Like, it was my late teens that Lost came out, and of course I was like, I love this. It keeps happening. Never as much as Rocky Horror. But in Lost, like, obviously every episode has, like, the flashback to a character's life before the island. And so I want that with Rocky Horror. just give me a hefty backstory for everyone. I want to know, like, is Frankenfurter, like, some sort of royalty? Like, why does he have a mansion? Why does he have servants? Like,
I like that some of this isn't explained, and like I think it makes it more interesting that a lot of it's you want that to happen, but secretly you don't at the same time.
Well, exactly. Like I as a human, I really hate over explanation. Like it just in conversation with people, like I kind of will, if I don't understand something, I will ask someone for further explanation, but otherwise I'm just like, yep, got it. And then also my style of comedy and my favorite comedy is very alternative, very weird, very silly, and so the less context there is, the better it is for me. But I suppose it's the curiosity of it that's so interesting. I'm like, you're leaving me wanting more Rocky Horror, and I suppose that's why I still love it so much after all this time.
Harper, what's a highlight song for you? Like, what do you like?
This one's basic, but I think it's got to be said because it's like one that everyone knows. It's the Time Warp, you know? I think it's I love a dance song, like where there are steps or a routine built in. Like, I love the cha-cha slide, you know? I love the Cuban shuffle. I'm always there for a dance song. So Time Warp is really good, and it's like fun. I think especially your first time you go to see it with a shadow cast, because you know, like, I think, like, for a lot of people, it's kind of stressful to go see it the first time because you don't know what you're in for. There's a lot of people just screaming things all the time, you know, and then this one number happens. And one, it's a popular song. You might already know it. And two, it tells you exactly what to do. And so you can feel like you're part of this community, even if it's like your first time, you know. And so for me, I just feel like and it's catchy, you know, and that tap number, Columbia doing that tap number. There's so much fun stuff. It introduces a lot of the Transylvanians, like a lot of the characters get introduced in that song. So I feel like that one is just like a really great number. It's hard to deny.
Like, I also love how, first of all, it's a lot like the song Oklahoma in Oklahoma, where like I think the one of the stories for this Rocky Horror was Richard O'Brien had a lot of these songs written out and like as a stage show, but they needed more material, so they had to like pad out some, like, you know, like they had to put Time Warp in there, and it's just so it's like a song that doesn't like have a narrative purpose per se, but it's still like phenomenally like and it's also like a warm-up to the actual main event of introducing Tim Curry. Like, he's such a radiant presence that you need an entire song to build up to, let's introduce him. Like, there's that. And then like, I like how the criminologist, like the movie starts off with like, okay, so Brad and Janet, they're two vanilla bottoms, all right? they started the story, and then like and then they set the framing device of the criminologist. I'm like, okay, so this guy's, and he's like, this is the story of Brad and Janet. I'm like, okay, got it. We're going to cut back to this guy. He's going to explain the context. And then by the time Time Warp comes off, the criminologist abandons his narrative duties. It's like, it's just a jump to the left.
Like, I was going to say, that is one of my favorite things about Time Warp, is how hyped the criminologist gets over the course of it. Like, he loves it.
There's, it's so delightful.
As you said, there's so many different things going on. There are several framing devices happening at once, and it's just interesting because obviously the criminologist, by default of who he is, has to break the fourth wall, has to speak to the audience. That's why he's there. I think it's fascinating that Frankenfurter breaks the fourth wall all the time. Like, he's this sort of omnipotent sort of character.
Yeah.
Like, he's always, like, looking right down the camera, and it's just like, it's not easy having a good time. Even smiling makes my face ache. Like, that's, I just love it a lot.
Well, okay, like, here's the, but, all right, Leslie, I'm gonna, like, throw you a softball here, okay?
Okay.
Tell me why gush about the Tim Curry performance. Like, gush about his performance as Frankenfurter. I just want to give you the CD of the four here.
He's just the best character in anything ever. There's not a single movie that wouldn't be improved by his presence as Frankenfurter. You know? Anything. Just have him walk on. He's so charismatic. He's just like, and then it's that thing of just being, you know, being absolutely the villain of the piece, but also just being the most watchable, most likable person by far. You know, I'm obsessed actually with the way that in I Can Make You a Man, there's just like a weakling weighing 98 pines. Like the way he says it, it doesn't fit with the accent at all. And I find that fascinating. Like, oh God, it's this thing where I'm just like, it's all I ever want to talk about, but I do not know how to be coherent about it. He's just kind of want to hang out with him. Kind of, it would be bad, but it would be great at moments. But also kind of be him, but not evil. Like, it's an interesting thing. And it was that sort of thing where, like, I think one of the times I watched it within the last couple of years, I'm like, I think I've always kind of wanted to be Frankenfurter. And I feel like I've kind of turned more, like, I'm nothing like him, but I can see within myself the sort of fact that the way I am in some ways, I'm like, oh, I'm slightly more Frankenfurter than I used to be. it's just such an odd thing. But yeah, it's just,
Tim Curry's a star. Like, just like, this is like first thing he's ever done. Like, his first, like, big leading role.
I think so. Yeah.
That's really, it's so immediately. Yeah. Like, it just like, anytime like him and Susan Sarandon are on screen, I'm like, where are they? Where they go?
You know, like, yeah.
Susan Sarandon too. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, probably a few years after I first saw Rocky Horror, so the initial obsession had kind of subsided, but, you know, it was, I feel like I hadn't really engaged with it that much for a while. I was taking a Greyhound bus from Ottawa, Canada, where I'm from, to New York City.
Shout out to
Stanley. I had my little old MP3 player, and I was, like, listening to it. Sorry?
Yeah, shout out to Stanley, who's from Ottawa.
That's our Canadian co-host. Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, my God, I didn't know that you had an Ottawan. That's really cool. It is genuinely known as the city fun forgot. So, like, Air Canada genuinely had a thing being like, long known as the city fun forgot, Ottawa tries to fight its reputation. And I'm like, don't tell people that's what people call it.
I didn't know it until you said it. Like, I didn't know
that was the thing. So funny.
There's such a weird defensiveness to, like, people from Ottawa. Like, people tried, it's very funny, people tried to crowdfund a documentary about how Ottawa is not the city fun forgot. People shouldn't call it that, but they did not meet their fundraising goal. So that's Ottawa. There are lots of amazing things about it. So I was on this Greyhound bus going to New York, and I was listening to my old MP3 player, just everything on shuffle, and Touch a Touch to Touch Me came on, and I was like, ha ha, Susan Sarandon, ha ha, sort of thing. Got to New York, went to a gig later that night, and Susan Sarandon was there.
Wow.
And I was going with my parents, and so my mom was there, and I saw, as my mom started to, I spotted Susan Sarandon, and I was like, holy shit, there she is. And then I saw my mom start to approach her. I'm like, well, I'm gonna meet Susan Sarandon as well.
How was it?
She was lovely. She was really nice. I did not tell her that I'd just been listening to her on Rocky Horror and going, you know.
You should have said that.
I suppose of all the
verbatim.
I suppose of all the things that she it's probably one of the things that she less has mentioned to her of everything she's ever done.
My highlight is we did Time Warp. We did Over the Frankenstein's Place. One thing I want to say about that is, like, it's a beautiful message of optimism, kind of couched in an exposition song. Just like that, like, really, that song, that's a song that could work as a standalone piece. I know, like, even like if David Bowie sang it and just like said the over at the Frankenstein's place, like, without any context, it would still work. It would still be like this abstract thing of like his type of lyricism.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's exactly how he writes.
Yeah.
Or like Queen, you know, like Bohemian Rhapsody is a bunch of things that mean nothing. And, you know, we all love it. So,
but yeah, you're like Scaramouche, we do the Fandango. I'm like, fuck yeah.
Yes, <I will>.
You know, so Hot Patootie is my highlight. I know, we got to talk about the other songs, but like, the Hot Patootie is just like, I liked it as the idea of like this character is like severely brain damaged, so he can't go like, help, like, let me out of this ice. Yeah.
Bless my soul, of the rock and roll.
Yeah, so he can't do anything other than sing the song and ride his motorcycle around.
Yeah,
and it's like so funny. It's like, the great reaction shocks from Frankenfurter, like his, just like when he like widens his eyes when he's kind of like flirting with like Rocky Horror a little bit, is like he's like he gets jealous and stuff. That's really great. All the horror with Meatloaf is really great. Like the when he gets murdered, when they pull the corpse,
he's revealed. Yeah,
it's like really like upsetting, and like even the screaming in the middle of his singing in Eddie is like really like oh wow, he did a great job. And another piece of trivia that's fun is, in the 2016, I think, remake, Adam Lambert played the Meatloaf role.
Oh, well, that's fun.
No, it's good. I actually think it's great. It's the best part of that, like, the clips I saw online. Like, he was, like, really, because Meatloaf and Adam Lambert have that same quality of, like, oh, yeah, Meatloaf, you know, but like whenever you think about them, they're like amazing. And like, you can't deny Adam Lambert as a singer. You can't really deny him necessarily. And no. He fits that. They fit really well. It's really good.
One time someone broke into my mom's car and stole all her CDs, but left Adam Lambert's CD.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
I know. It's really sad, but it's very funny.
Oh,
I saw him with Queen once, and it was very good. He is he's a real performer, I gotta say.
Yeah, he does have the right sort of vocal range. It's like similarly like Mika, who kind of came and went as a musician, also is the other person I could see doing well enough to do Freddie Mercury style vocals.
Yeah.
And I think he really wanted to. I feel like the way that Mika wrote songs, and probably still does, was so much like, but I'm like Freddie Mercury, and everyone's like, okay, Mika. You know?
Any other highlight songs that we haven't talked about?
Science Fiction double feature, real quick. I feel like, we gotta say it. It's a great opening. It's a great song. It just really sucks you in. Yeah.
I do love the reprise as well. Like, I do love the review of everything that's just happened and how dramatic it is as well. Darkness has conquered Brad and Janet. And it's like, no, they're probably gonna be fine. You know, they'll probably just block it out, maybe get into some therapy. Like, they'll be okay.
My favorite like Letterboxd, I don't think they're going to get therapy. My favorite Letterboxd
review. No, they're not therapy people.
My favorite Letterboxd review, like, that drive home must have been.
Also, they still haven't got their tire fixed.
Yeah.
I actually just sort of briefly talking about Sweet Transvestite, which I do just love very much, but of course I do, because as we know, I love Frankenfurter and it is his introduction song. I love the fact that he wants to get them a satanic mechanic specifically. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it really shows he's really committed to the lifestyle. Like, he really, you know, like it would be cheaper and easier at nighttime in the middle of nowhere to just get any old mechanic. But he's like, you know what? Subcultural people, come on. I really appreciate that about him, you know?
Let me look on Reddit, like these subreddits here.
Yeah. Are you a Satanist? Come fix a tire.
Wait, like, yes. Can you fix a tire? No. Ah, dang. We gotta get to find a new guy. like every line in that song is just like, you're just like captivated at the edge of your seat. And then he takes advantage of it with the anticipation. Patient. And like, everyone who tries it can't do it as good. Like, just the amount of time he chooses to wait is perfect. The popping his pee patient is so perfect.
And I think, it's everything. It's just like, I think that the first fourth wall breaking that he does is, you know, well, you got caught with a flat. Well, how about that? And it's just, and you're like, oh, Frankenfurter's talking to us now.
Let's go through lowlights and then straight observations, and then we could, like, you know, maybe circle back. So what are some lowlight songs? if you had to, like, I imagine, Leslie, you probably have a harder time with that. But like, if you had to choose something,
I don't really care that much about touch me.
Wow,
it's fine. You know, it serves a purpose. It's needed, but it's not like, apart from that one time it came up on shuffle on my MP3 player and then I met Susan Sarandon later that day. but it's not a song I would ever choose to listen to on its own. It's not one that I would go, oh, I must hear it now. But yeah, so I think that is definitely one of mine.
Also, doesn't make sense narratively because, you know, she sleeps with Tim Curry like before that. Yeah,
she's tasted blood and she wants more.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I got it.
So yeah, I got it.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's before that evening she'd only ever kissed before.
Okay.
She thought there was no use getting into heavy petting. It only leads to trouble and seat wetting.
Yeah, the creature of the night is like so odd, but like that's the part that stays in my head. Like
her weird visions of everyone being on top of her.
Yeah, I like that weird shot, like where they're all like looking, peering down into the camera, like she's having sex with all of them, but it's like not exactly. Yeah. I like that. It's weird. It's a weird choice.
Now imagine instead of like the person who plays Rocky Horror, like Matthew Morrison. So
nasty.
It's so upsetting to me.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that. I think I assumed that what's his name, Trouty Mouth Sam was Rocky.
Court Overstreet.
Yes, Court Overstreet. Because he's got the look.
But like, it's like every time, like in those Emily St. James reviews, like one of the straight, like, you know, at the end of like the review, there's like the stray observations or whatever they're called. Like every review would be Emily writing in all caps, Court Overstreet. It's so funny. It's so funny. Shout out to her. Love her. All right. My Lola is Sword of Damocles, Wise Up Janet, Wise. Those are just the songs that like...
Oh, well, yeah, they're not on the actual soundtrack.
Yeah, it's like, I think like they are on some level, like they're not as catchy as the other ones. And like, I actually don't think we need Rocky as a character in this. Like, I think it's like too much things throwing at you at the same time. Like, it doesn't really... Yeah.
The blank picture show.
Yeah.
the picture show.
Yeah. Or and before it was a movie, the show.
No, that's a show. Yeah, like it's like, I don't know, I'm just like thinking about this character. I guess like I'm confused on like how much they want us to think about this stuff, like if they want us to think about this as much as Leslie thinks about this stuff, like
not 19 years and counting.
Yeah, but like of the like, should we feel like sympathy for this character? Is this just kind of like treated as like kind of like a gag that like he's just like this, you know, libido obsessed like character? Like, are we supposed to, you know, it's like kind of like he's always like existence is pain. The only respite is like, you know, getting it on and such.
So from what little we saw of Eddie, he did not seem remotely horny. No, he was a bit actually with Columbia. I was just wondering whether Frank took the horny half of Eddie's brain to put in Rocky.
That's how brains work.
Yeah. Like, the horny half. And the rock and roll half. You know, motorcycle half.
Harper, do you have a low light?
Yeah, I know you guys called this out as a highlight, but I'm going to go Eddie on this one. This one, fair to enough. Me, it's like all over the place. It's just, yeah, there's a lot going on to me. I feel like that's kind of where I'm starting to, you know, I'm starting to feel like the movie could end soon, you know, like I'm feeling it's a late night and I'm ready to go home. Yeah. So probably has more to do with the time of day that I have tended to watch this movie, but that's the one for me.
Yeah, like this movie like reminds me of like The Shining a little bit. Like it's like Tim Curry does the Kubrick stare a few times, like when he's like murdering Eddie and stuff, and the set of the lab with the deep reds and stuff, like, and the shaky camera and the colors and the phallic imagery. It's like kind of like Clockwork Orangey, kind of like The Shining a bit. And then like the other thing is like this movie came out in 1975 while Rocky came out in 1976.
Oh.
And then The Shining came out in 1980. So like you could argue that this movie innovated, left the room for those two that people claim are super influential. So like, that's what else. Yeah.
It's interesting that you mentioned A Clockwork Orange, because when I was 18, my next obsession after Rocky Horror was A Clockwork Orange. I was having a weird year.
You seem like a fun person to hang out with.
I am. It's just, I don't know. I just had a dark phase, I guess.
It's a great movie. It's like what I can't, like, I got to check this out again. Yeah.
It's just, I think it's just the fascination, too, of the invented dialect that it doesn't take long for you to catch on to. Like, it's sort of... It's such a powerful thing, because I read the book of A Clockwork Orange, and for the first couple of pages, you'd go, what the fuck? And then you just go, oh, yeah, I get you. And that's fascinating that he could do that. Like, it's, yeah.
Andrew, I would really encourage you to find a shadow cast near you and get the full experience, because I think that, like, you know, like, there are things to appreciate about the movie on its own, but I do think, like, the experience is just something everyone should do once, at least.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all right, let's go through final thoughts and ratings. The way this works is we'll rate this album in this movie out of 10, the fun metric at the end. Speaking on Harper's point, I would absolutely see this again. It was so fun. It was, I want to see it in the context of like a live show. I want to see it. I totally would rewatch clips again of just like the songs. That's like so fun to me. And it's, all the songs are so like iconic. All the songs are so recognizable. The structure's there. It's funny. It's interesting. It's like radical for the time, and like still kind of radical, but also like not radical. I could say like in the today context, but like that's a whole different discussion. I would say the only critique though is just like it does feel like sort of Frankensteined a little bit of like tones and ideas and lore, where it's like kind of where I just like wish there was like the guy could do like another draft. The guy could like, just like, you know, or like, but at the same time, like the fact that it doesn't cohere together is like what makes it fun and what makes it interesting to talk about, instead of like a studio going like, all right, it needs to end with like Radioactive by like Imagine Dragons at the end. Like, some, like, you know, like, you know.
I suppose that's what lends itself so well to the cult thing is that sort of lack of polish in that particular way.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, it feels like the Muppets, like something they would come up with, like something like adult like Muppets in a way. And like,
mentioning all my other favorite things. It's suddenly who I am as a person seems to be fitting together really well.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to give it 8 finger tattoos on Eddie's fingies out of 10. I was going to go 7 and make the joke of like love hats, but like, I think it deserves an 8. Yeah, I think it deserves an 8. So I'm going
to
give it that.
I just love it so much. I'm like, I feel like I suppose I don't have to have an unbiased opinion on account of the reason I'm here is because I'm very biased. I understand that it has flaws, but I suppose just for me, like it brings me such joy. It brings me, you know, I sort of love all the things about it that are imperfect as much as I love all the things that are like super polished and amazing. So it is definitely a 10 out of 10 for me, just because I do, you know, there's very few things that I've loved for so long and like with such intensity. So it's just, you know, I suppose its importance to me really does factor in.
Yeah. Wow. I feel like this is about to sound really harsh.
Zero.
I think I'm going to give it 6.5 out of 10 RKO radio pictures. because, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's obviously a huge part of my life, my adolescence, high school, college experience. But I did fully get burned out on Rocky because I did it so much in such a short period of time. But I mean, I obviously appreciate it, and I think it's a super fun thing to go out and do at least once. And then for me, you know, I did it like hundreds of times. So it's just a part of me. And because of that, I feel like I could be a little harsh, you know.
So, yeah, that was our episode on Rocky Horror Picture Show. You know, send us a DM or an email at ibeenmeaningtolistentothat@gmail.com if you want to like talk more about it. So Leslie, thank you so much. This is so great. This is like genuinely so wonderful. And like, I'm really excited for people to hear this.
Oh.
Like, thank you so much for, you know, sharing your perspective. And, we really enjoyed like giving you the space to talk about it.
Thank you. I really enjoyed, obviously, I really enjoyed being here. And it's, yeah, thank you so much for having me. This has been really, really fun.
Yeah, come back again. Maybe meet our Ottawa friend.
Yes, please. Oh my God, we'll get so into Ottawa lore.
Lore. So, Leslie, what would you like to plug? What's out there for you?
Oh God. Well, if anyone listening happens to live in London, UK, I do stand-up comedy here. I co-run a comedy night called Troy Club, which is at the Black Heart in Camden. So come to that. Long shot, but you might be someone here. So come,
sure. Yeah.
Come find me, not in a creepy way. Or I have a podcast. It's currently defunct, but it's called A Fun Time with Katie and Leslie. And it's just basically very whimsical nonsense with my friend Katie Mitchell, who's an amazing comedian. So yeah. Subscribe to that, listen to our old episodes, and hopefully we'll be recording more soon.
Awesome. So yeah, you could follow Harper's Letterboxd, harping about that's pretty cool.
Thank you. Find my reviews of Rocky Horror Picture Show and Killers of the Flower Moon from this weekend.
Was that movie that you wrote, like, was this written by Tony Blair? Like,
oh, The Queen with
funny. That's hilarious.
It was so pro Blair.
So, yeah, like, you can follow me at Andrew Ambrose Lee on Instagram. You could follow Harper at Harping About on Instagram and Letterboxd. You could follow Stanley at Snap a Sten on Instagram and in Ottawa. You could follow him in a weird way.
just find him at his place of work.
Yeah.
He might be hanging around in the Byward Market. That's an Ottawa place.
You can follow Michael at Lemon Taco on Instagram. Check out his article on Troy Sivan. That's really awesome. And Leslie, what song would you like to close this out with?
Can we please close it out with appropriately science fiction double feature reprise?
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a good day. Click.
Science fiction double feature.